Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with two for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, more terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
You're listening to the Screw Podcast with Felicia Rose and A-Love. Before we continue on for our episode this week, we would like to read a list of the fallen victims from the Club Q shooting.
Daniel Davis Aston.
Kelly Loving.
Ashley Paw.
Derek Rump.
Raymond Green Vance.
Now we'd like to take a quick moment of silence for them. Thank you. All right, Aaron. Well, not to start our episode on a somber note, but that's what we have to do sometimes. The reality of life as a queer person isn't all daisies, rainbows, and ass jokes. So I know that this hit you hard because of various reasons, but if you'd like to start talking about your specific connection to this place, I would love for you to share it with the audience.
So let me start off on a light note. I was conceived in Colorado Springs, where this club is. My dad had gotten his first posting in the Army at the base there. And, you know, so little Aaron came to be out there, which is fitting because Club Q is attached to a bathhouse, and it's actually the last bathhouse that I had been to in recent months. And, you know, I've talked about, you know, bathhouses. We've talked to Patrick Morano on here before, and he does a lot of bathhouse reviews. And it really was a very quaint and cute place. It's a bathhouse attached to a nightclub. And all of Denver's bathhouses closed during COVID. So this is kind of the only game in town if you're looking for a nice place to, you know, have a, you know, kind of sexual encounter with a, you know, hot tub and, you know, steam room and all the nine yards. A very unique place. It was one of the coolest bathhouses, and bathhouse culture is definitely dying in this country for many reasons that we can connect to a lot of other things having to do with shame and lack of sex positivism. But I met the owners out front with my partner, and they're like, ah, you know, you can get room, you know, food and drinks delivered to your bathhouse room from next door at Club Q. Ironically, the weekend of the shooting, my partner and I had discussed, because where we live, there's no bathhouses, had said, okay, what's the closest bathhouse? And it was still Club Q, which, you know, is about 5.5-6 hours from where we are. And we decided, for whatever reason, not to go. Thankfully, but anyway, so, you know, it gets eerie as like the stuff sinks in. I remember, you know, the Pulse nightclub shooting. It was very affecting because, you know, any of us that are queer and looking for a place to congregate that isn't like the online world is going to be one of these places. And we're still very much dealing with these levels of homophobia and internalized and otherwise in culture, especially here in the US. And, you know, as much as we rah, 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 that we think we have, again, queer marriage and all these things that, you know, we're kind of post these problems. And then we have these little wake ups that remind us that we're not.
The first thing I thought about when I heard about it was you, because you and I have frequented queer bars and nightclubs and establishments together so many times that to the point where you're one of the few people that I did this with on a regular basis. You know, we've been to nightclubs all over the East Coast together, and queer ones at that.
And we fought with people at queer clubs trying to get you me.
All the way down to New Orleans and back.
Remember, they said you can stay at the bar, and they let you smoke blunts, which was really cool. But like, you can't go into the dark room.
Right, and I love you. And that's the thing is, like, you know, whether we were at a nightclub or just a the Eagle or whatever, we have been to so many places together. And so, like, I instantly thought of you, and also you're closer to that area of the country, you know. I instantly thought of you, and I instantly thought about one of the Jackson Heights clubs we had been to more recently, like probably within the last 5 years or so. And I thought about just like the video in my phone of us having a beautiful time. And I remember I was like eyeing some cute girl and we were dancing and all this stuff. And then I had this like moment of imagine if I'm like facing you and we're dancing. And that happened. Like, it blew my mind to think about it in that way. It was just so like the Pulse nightclub shooting hit me in a different way because you and I knew somebody that lost a partner during it.
Right.
And so that was like one of those ones where, you know, I felt, you know, it was so close to home, but this one was so strange in the way that like I imagined us there. And I don't know what that was about, but either way, like, the fact that you almost were there, like, that just, it kind of blows my mind. And
I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, when you visited here eventually, because we're still, you know, we're still new here and you haven't been yet, but you're coming soon. Like, this would have been in the general area. We would have definitely gone. And while you wouldn't have been able to go to the bathhouse side, we would have definitely, you know, brought you, you know, to that bar because, you know, it had, you know, the last time my partner and I were there, like, it filled up. It was the weekend. We had just dropped his mom off at the airport. Like, we were like really surprised because, you know, these places are fickle, you know, and Colorado Springs is extremely conservative as far as the base of people that are there. There's a video that you actually sent me of the father of the shooter on Twitter saying stupid ass fucking shit, fucking dumbass.
See where it stems from, and it's off in the home. And the father literally said, why was he at a queer nightclub? Oh good, he's not gay, he was just shooting people. The fuck? The first thing that crosses your mind is, but wait, was my kid gay? Not, wait, my kid killed people? The fuck?
Right.
I don't care how many people were like, he looks like he's on drugs. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. Yeah. What the fuck? You know, like, my brain literally melted out of my fucking ears at that point.
And let's be clear, like, drug and alcohol use does not change your base value.
No shit.
System.
No shit.
If you're an asshole, like, drunk and on drugs, you're an asshole fucking sober.
Yeah, because usually you're more honest when you're drunk on drugs, too. You know, it's not the, like, usually you keep your mouth shut when you're sober comparative, you know? So, anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, there's a great tie in here. I mean, not that it's great. But the tie-in is very simply, you know, we have a series that this is the first episode of talking about masculinities and toxic masculinity and, you know, kind of focused on it within queer culture, you know. So I don't know the inner workings of the shooter's fucking mind in this situation, but let's be clear, it is a stemming from homophobia, whether internalized or externalized. And homophobia is most definitely connected to masculinities and toxic masculinity. And, you know, in this, you don't have to be a man to propagate toxic masculinity. You can be anybody and still hold this very socially constructed idea of roles for men, quote unquote, and women, quote unquote. And these things definitely bring us into the area of like when somebody is feeling, you know, overwhelmed about how they can or cannot conform to roles set up for them by society, this can become a very challenging thing internally with shame, and many times the shame is taken and projected out on others. If you're really good at playing pretend or filling the role or following the norm, you know, when you see that norm deviated from, it makes you angry, right? And this is the big problem with the continued propagation of this, and specifically in our culture. Be very clear that butch femme, top bottom, all these things are stemming from masculinities and toxic masculinity, and they are unhealthy for us as a culture, and they are unhealthy for our society because shit like this happens.
Yeah, and they all stem from nonsense, patriarchy, colonialism, fucking colonization. This is where they stem from. There are so many cultures out there that never had a fucking whiff of what gender was supposed to be according to, let's say, America's societal constructs, right? Or you know, a patriarchal society in general. And it's not until the fucking assholes showed up and said, you know, women are going to look like this, men are going to look like this, you have to fill these fucking roles, you can't deviate from these bubbles, and you're less of a XYZ if you can't perform ABC, you know? And it's disgusting that, I don't want to say disgusting, that's the wrong word for it. It makes sense that a group of marginalized people that are fighting for acceptance, we're fighting tooth and fucking nail to just survive, that, you know, our peers would look at whatever the norm of society is that they could fit in and act as such and continue that narrative. And I understand where that stems from, but it's our generation and below, we have to break that shit. We have to break it and smash it to pieces. So it's not, you know, are you mask for mask conversation? It's humanity, right, that we're looking at, you know, and it's understandable, but it's also time for it to fucking stop.
Yeah. So I think a good place to kind of so, you know, this is the kind of what we think we know kind of part of the series. And this is going to be a little bit more difficult for this particular topic because there's a lot of stuff written about this, whether you're in the field of sociology or psychology. But let me give you my political idea about where this is from and why and what we're actually mimicking when we mimic these roles in queer culture, right? So, you know, there was a time, you know, in the U.S., and I'm going to stick for the U.S. because all these things, you know, the Western ideas of masculinity and femininity, you have a lot of origin variances from like the East, and I want to just stick to with what I think we know growing up in this culture, right? So circle back, and we have like pre-industrial, we're mostly a farming society, right? You know, my great-grandparents, who, you know, were coming of age at the turn of the century, 1900s, you know, they, you know, had a farm and they had some kids and everybody divided the labor. And maybe there was some light, you know, gender roles in terms of, yeah, of course, Ma is going to cook like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but she's also out milking the cows. She's also doing this and she's also doing that, mm-hmm. right? And Pa is doing X, Y, and Z. And that's the division of labor. You know, people are wearing fucking overalls and things that make sense for the farm, not dresses and high heel shoes, right? So our culture is progressing. We're getting more, you know, and I think a lot of this, if we look back, a lot of the ideas of these gender roles will come in around advertising and TV culture. And when you start seeing things presented that, like, you know, show the woman cleaning the house with the vacuum, putting the dishes in the dishwasher or dish soap, or, you know, all this stuff that's basically selling the idea that a woman is here to clean the house and raise the kids. And amazingly, this is what she looks like, all done up in her little dress. Who's doing fucking housework in their dress and high heel shoes, right?
Not unless you're paying and me then, for it, baby.
Exactly. And then, you know, you have, you know, these things that the trucks are being sold to dad, and the power tools and grilling in the back fucking yard and fixing shit and breaking shit. And let's not forget the war machine starts advertising, and we're putting machine guns and we're training your son on how to be a man. And, you know, all these things are kind of brewing a culture. And there you go. You have your construct. And why? Do it. Like, what is all this for? To fucking sell you shit. So, brothers and sisters, you're mimicking masculinities to fucking help propagate the idea of buying shit and stuff, right? Like, all of this is not a moral thing.
Well, right. You know? And whatever the reason was at the time, at whatever time period you look at, the reasoning was always nonsense, is the point. Whether right. it was consumerism, whether it was, to keep women from rising up together and asking about getting a bank account, to keep women from the workplace right. because of XYZ nonsense. You know, there's so many, you know, you can look at each time period throughout and really figure out what the reason for these specific right. gender roles were. And it was always nonsense. And it was always keeping the patriarchy in place. It was right. always, I mean, we have to worry about the women having power, you know, God forbid. And so whatever right. system we use to keep that from happening, whether it was women can't be in our plays, it has to be men dressed as women, which is interesting, to say the least, if you look at right. gender roles. Right. Whatever the reasoning was, it was always, or I should say, however it happened, the reasoning was always nonsense and it was always the patriarchy. Always.
Right. I mean, then you had the, you know, the connection, I think this is really heavy in the 80s, 90s and stuff, the family values. And let's not forget that one of the Family Research Council, which is a very conservative, anti-queer, anti-women, anti-everything fucking think tank, is also in the Colorado Springs area. Mm. So, and they were very quintessential in like this family's value thing to be anti-queer. And like, and this is again, my perplexion, perplexion, my confusion, you know, and I get it. It's a heavy social construct. It's fed at us again and again and again. But like when we're mimicking and encouraging these roles, this mask for mask stuff, and taking top and bottom as an identity rather than like a sex activity, you know, what we're saying is, you're right, Family Research Council, you're right, family values. But we're just kind of retrofitting it in a way that's not what they're talking about, but we're adopting it. You know, and if we're gonna have real solidarity in the community and really work towards like some level of health and not just be living in victim culture within our community, we are going to have to get on board with the idea of these things being a social construct that is fucking toxic to our community.
I agree. And just to say, I also want to say it's okay to be okay with a role or attracted to a role that does fit these stereotypes and that does fit the, you know, what the patriarchy wants, right? It's okay to say, I'm more submissive and I would like to stay home and work around the house while my boo goes to work all day. It's okay to fill that role, but you have to still fight against it in the streets. I don't give a fuck what you do in your household, right? But you can't perpetuate this as this is the way it has to be. There has to be a line drawn of this is my preference versus this is me fighting against the fact that people are actually, you know, trying to uphold these specific roles for more than just preference.
Right. This is, these are, and this is something that gets conflated a lot. And this is one of the areas, like, I definitely think we need to, you know, and I'll give a props out to Master Joshua for being really good about talking about these things in terms of BDSM culture, because there is not a lot of that going on in deconstructing and pulling apart the idea of submissive and dominant kind of personality preferences and attaching those, the idea of masculine and feminine, right. which are already constructs. Right. So if we're talking, you know, what are we saying, Samessa? We're saying you're more feminine? No, that's bullshit. It doesn't make sense. It's a false narrative, you know, as is the masculine. Perfect example. I came across a profile the other day that said mask for mask. And within the subtext of it, it said plus plus if you're into lingerie, panties. And I'm like, hold on. Okay, so we've got a new layer of fucked upness around how we're talking about masculinities with the queer men here. You're saying that you're so open-minded now that you're into the idea of, like, you know, some clothing or dress up in sex that is typically, you know, female oriented, but you're only into it if that gentleman can present very masculine.
Oh, okay, so that confused me when you first said that. So you're right. Saying that they are, or at least we think, that they're asking for a masculine presenting partner that also will then put on panties.
Right. But not act feminine. Right? So you don't want some fucking beautiful
I'm here
queen.
To chop your tree in my panties. Exactly. It's always these unrealistic exactly. like role plays too, which is always funny. For uh-huh. You're going to go clean the dishes in a bra and panties. Like, I don't want grease on my bra, bitch. It's expensive.
Exactly. So
understood. Okay.
So this, you know, this
so
is obviously
for the record, you know.
And just kind of, like, ridiculous. However, I'm going to put this is a good time to caveat here. Mm. Society, socially, has constructed and fucked us up in a lot of different ways around sex and sexuality. And we don't have a long enough lifetime to deconstruct and kind of pull out all of these. And I do truly believe that. I say you work on some, but because I am a pleasure-centered motherfucker, I understand that there are concepts of these things that obviously you're into BDSM. It doesn't mean you support, like, spousal abuse,
sure.
Right? So, you know, in this same vein, running a scene in your sex life is your business. Mm-hmm. Our psyche, our desires is our business. If you're with a consenting partner and these are, like, games you want to play in bed, this is not what I'm fucking talking
right,
about.
Right,
here.
No, because there's no shame. It's okay
right.
if you have a consenting partner participating in whatever the fuck you want to do.
Right.
Like, I don't care. No judgment there at all.
But if you do put mask for mask or butch looking for femme in any of your social dating profiles, you are propagating toxic masculinity.
Explain.
You want to work on that?
Tell us why.
Right. So whether you're female queer, male queer, like, there is this, you're shaming other people by saying, even indirectly, you can say, this is my preference. Fine, work that out when you meet somebody. But what you're saying at the get-go is you're not even interested in fucking talking to people that don't fit whatever your crazy idea of this is, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. this is a spectrum, as we learned on the train. To me, if you put mask for mask and then put this shit about the lingerie in, you've created your own idea of what mask means. And somebody else would tell you, that's not mask.
Sure,
by my
definition. Sure, okay.
As soon as he puts those fucking panties on, that's not what I consider mask anymore. Mm-hmm. I get what you're doing here, but the reality is, save your setup for what you want to do in the bed for a personal conversation. Because what you're putting out there is you're spreading out this concept, this social construct that is not real, that is so spectrum-ass for everybody's mind of what they think it means out there. And
right.
you're spreading fucking hate.
Which is why I was often asked, why are you with, you know, another femme when I've dated feminine women? And it was always so funny to me because I'm like, well, first of all, now you're assuming that I don't date feminine men. Or non-binary
right.
femmes.
And you do.
Absolutely. And also, there's a lot of assumption there, but also, again, you're basing that confusion off of what I've explained to you that I like in the bedroom, which is that I like to be submissive. So what you're trying to say is that femininity and submission are tied together. Hello, we've got a problem here. I can date a femme that likes to throw me down and make me her puppy or their puppy. You know what I mean? Like, it has nothing to do, you know, or his puppy for that matter. Like, it has nothing to do with what I like in the bedroom. Just because somebody is presenting, in your opinion, as feminine does not mean that that equates to anything going on in the bedroom. So again, the assumption of she is a submissive, so she must like only hyper masculinized whomever. That's ridiculous. And that's my experience with it, is I don't have a Grindr profile, obviously. And I did once, what, like 12 years ago?
Yeah.
I sure did. But, you know, I don't have that experience where, you know, I'm seeing mask for mask all over the place, or, you know, any of that. But in my situation, it's a lot of the onlookers who are very confused that I could possibly be attracted to somebody feminine presenting because I'm a submissive. What the fuck? None of that is tied together, you know?
Yeah. So the more base version of that, and we've talked about this before, is the idea of like top bottom meaning. And I'm going to say this, it's a journey, right? As much as like we're angry because we're emotional because more bad shit has happened, and it's connected to stuff that already is pissing us off, right? But like, you can start anywhere. But I will say this, this is not where to start. So in the beginning, for this young,
there was Adam and Steve.
for this aging faggot right here, the evolution of kind of some of these constructs, definitely they were propagated within our culture, sure, to some degree, you know, with Tom of Finland stuff, even the idea of leather bars and stuff like that back in the day, or, you know, the top was mask, and there was kind of an embracement of bottom femme as an idea, right? And somehow I've noticed that over the years, we think that somehow saying that you want a mask bottom is some sort of progression. It's not. It's a digression. And it also, again, doesn't make any sense. And this is something, and this is why this is important. From your first newbie days, and these days it would be from your first sign in to fucking one of these stupid motherfucking apps, you know, you are asked to pick a category and place yourself in it so other people can like gravitate towards the category that they're quote unquote looking for. And, you know, even back in the gay.com days, before all this Grindr bullshit, before Manhunt evolved into kind of this Grindr bullshit, people didn't have a place to put mass, femme, or any. They hadn't drawn out the identity pool yet for our selection. But people were asking and saying kind of veiled things like, not into the scene, right? And
not into
the
what?
Confused. The scene.
Oh.
I'm not into the scene. Well, I don't know what the fuck the scene is, but over the, you know, years of kind of being told what the scene, I'm like, what, you don't go to gay bars? You don't fucking...
like, that's what I would have assumed, right? not into going out dancing.
Yeah, no, they're not into the Just Jack kind of reality of femme, queer, kind of... what they were saying back then is mask, you know, and that, you know, mask gay man looking for whatever, right? Not into the scene. It's like this like bro thing, right?
I'm just confused.
Right. Like, right, exactly. and it's always been confusing. And our evolution that we think is an evolution has been to be able to feel like we can directly say mask for mask. Which at least back then we were polite enough to know that, God, that sounds offensive. That sounds like something fucking straight people would do to us.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool. Now we're doing it to each other. Great job progressing, community.
Right.
You know, and this is the thing, you know, and again, a caveat, I get it's a journey. These are things that are put on us from the first time.
Sure, sure. When you're young and you're unsure and you're just following what other people are doing. Listen, I've made plenty of mistakes with representation of oneself. Plenty, you know.
Yeah.
And that's
no, sure.
It is quite a journey, sure.
It is, and I can't blame you. You know, you put in front of the boob tube or streaming these days or whatever, and you still see a lot of this encouragement of this kind of roles. That's why, you know, from our last series, it's important that we talk about representation not looking one particular way. Otherwise, we don't get beyond some of these issues, right? You know, so when I was like 16, you know, and looking for a good time, you know, I went to a bar underage that I could get into, because back then you could kind of still get away with that shit.
Oh yeah, even my age too.
Right. So it was like not a fake ID situation. It was like we'd like pretty young things hanging around.
Yeah,
the park.
Same. Of course, you go in with the boob out and you're good, or you know whatever.
Yeah. So I was there one night, and you know, and I wasn't yet heavily indoctrinated into all these confusing identity, prejudice, level rules, bullshit that we had in our culture. I was not yet fully hearing that. Like, if I'm bottoming for somebody, I'm their bitch. You know, I had not yet been told that, like, all the tops are masked. And if you're not masked, we're going to assume you're not a top. None of these kind of stereotype, like, community pressures had sunk in yet. And this beautiful gentleman, like, hit me up at the bar and, like, he was like, you know, I want to take you home. And I was like, okay, that's exactly what I came here for. So
I love your watered down version. And I said, okay,
exactly.
That's what I
can do. I mean, I probably was like rubbing his crotch at the bar, and shit, you know. Yeah, I've always been that precocious. So we get back to their place, and this is in fucking downtown Springfield area, right? Okay. So like, I wasn't killing it. I had a shitty apartment over on Locust. And, you know, this is kind of the deal. And so, you know, I get into this person's bedroom, and it's actually like, you know, for a shitty fucking place, like on the outside, the inside, his room is done up beautifully. That's a color. And then, like, I noticed there's a mannequin, which, you know, is a little bizarre in my head, but it's got a beautiful fucking dress on it. And, you know, and it looks like some kind of seamstressing is going on here. Or seamstering. Oh, I realize seamstress.
Please don't tell me this goes into some weird Buffalo Bill shit.
No, I swear it doesn't. Okay, so I don't really say anything. We're sitting on the bed, we smoke a ball, you know, which like is making me tune into more of my surroundings. And he goes, I'm sure you have a question about what that is. And I was kind of like, you know, my first thing is like, well, you make clothing for people, and you know, just like in my innocence
or
whatever. You're a
seamstress, like, yeah.
Right. And he goes, no, I'm a top drag performer at the queer bars here.
That's awesome.
And I was like, oh, cool. Yeah, totally cool. Then again, not yet indoctrinated into what that meant, because I forgot a key part of the party, the story. I'm there to get fucked by this person. Like, definitely want to get fucked. Like, definitely.
I don't think you forgot that part of the story. I think we all understand what was going on.
Right. So, you know, it's only important in the sense of, again, the stereotyping, because he is the first one that tells me, does that bother you? Because when most men hear this, they're not into getting fucked by a drag performer.
Okay.
Because of the femme connotation to it. Mm-hmm. And I was confused. I mean, this is part of queer culture. Some people are, I've seen Torchong trilogy already. Get the fuck out of here. Like, some people are drag, especially in our culture, this is one of the things that can be done for a living, right? And so I don't think about it. And like, you know, I'm like, no. And he's like, oh, you're so cool. Like, you don't have like hang-ups, it doesn't seem like.
You're like, cool. I'm too like young and have no clue.
Right.
Have hang-ups.
I'm, kids, you fuck me already? Like, what's going on?
So pure and innocent. Sweet.
Yeah. Pure, innocent, pretty horny. And let me say, fucking one of the best fucks of my life. Like, it was, you know, like, I mean, it was really nice, you know. And over the years, because a lot of quote unquote tops did feed into a lot of this masculine bullshit, it wasn't nice. It was like having some straight, internally homophobic motherfucker just like brutalize you for 5 to 25 seconds and then roll off of you and fall asleep.
Which for the record happens in straight cis scenarios,
exactly,
as well, of course, as we know,
right.
But like even worse that isn't broken when it comes to a queer relationship.
Yeah. I mean, if you want applause for coming out, but then adopting all of mommy and daddy's roles in your relationship, I ain't giving you any fucking applause because I'm not sure what you've come out from.
Do you think that mommy and daddy issues play a huge role into these sorts of things? Because I sometimes think it's like, okay, you are clearly just spewing what your family thinks. And then sometimes I think like, wow, you truly hate your mom, for example, or your dad, for example. And because of that, you have some like weird internalized misogyny that you just can't get past. I think some of it definitely has to do with that, which is something we can do a deeper dive into, of course.
Yeah, I think you're right. My guess is that it has some like, you know, there's an additional layer, right? When we're killing it at life under capitalism, there's some sort of scorecard. And my guess is that this mommy and daddy thing kind of stems from our internalized kind of idea of how good that mommy and daddy are killing it at the social norm roles of being mommy and dad.
Right.
And that's been an evolution in our culture too. You know, we went from that kind of stone cold 50s and ineffectual father, mommy's little helper kind of reality to this kind of idea that, yeah, mommy and daddy work, but, you know, there's still these kind of roles and still these certain things that you need from them. You know, you should still have a mom in the home to give you nurturing, whatever. I hate to break this to you, but nurturing does not come naturally for mommies and it don't come naturally for daddy. Right? It's something that you have to have experienced and learned in your life to be able to impart it onto other human beings. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think this kind of, thing that happens with mommy and daddy issues is literally that, like, based on the idea of what advertising and social pressure has taught mommy and daddy, what do we think about how mommy don't look like that commercial with the Glade plug?
Well, and also our parents speak ill of one another sometimes, or have fights and have expectations for one another that don't fit these same molds, right? You know, I come home and I just want a dinner cooked for me or whatever, whoever's yelling about whatever. It's almost like which parent you kind of sided with during that time and then which one echoed the other shit. You know, it's an interesting layer. Like you said, it's all layers. There's layers to this shit. And, you know, society is the biggest layer. Society and capitalism is the biggest layer. And then from there, there's all these smaller layers that then trickle down into like when your daddy was yelling at your mommy and how you'd hear their bed squeak for 20 minutes afterwards because that's how your mommy dealt with daddy, right? You know, some weird shit. When there's 3,000 million gajillion, that's not a word, a number, scenarios, but it all comes down to like, under which layer were you when you have had this perceived misogynistic moment of your life, you know?
Right, well, and it is important because it is, you know, unfortunately, our society has yet got to the point where we talk about, in general terms, what it means to be a good human. You know, we still have very much like subcategories, because I'm thinking like, oh, you know, I hear all the time still, he's a good man. Just get yourself a good man in queer culture and outside. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry. What the fuck does good man mean?
Right.
Because if man, the idea of it and our culture and all the values associated with it is a fucking construct, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right. And you know exactly what's being spoken about and what's being perpetuated in that moment. It's simply that this person breaks the mold of what a man has been taught to be, which is to expect dinner, not clean the house, not be the caretaker, not give a shit, not have to be told 20 times to do the same fucking thing before they goddamn do it. All these things that there's so many goddamn TikTok women out there yelling about and all this shit. That's what they mean. It's that this man is breaking the mold. What the fuck? First of all, get that shit out of your head. What about non-binary people? What about people that don't identify as either a man or a woman? You're completely just making these things that make no sense to even be spewing anymore into important topics of conversation, and they shouldn't be. It's nonsense.
Well, it's also the rewriting of what it means to be masculine, right? Because we certainly know that they mean responsible. And when you add the word man, that means job, like ability to provide. We mean some level of chivalry. So I mean, so this update to the mold that they're breaking is really the same mold, just like them actually being able to accomplish.
It's a rewritten. It's rewritten, and what happens is you look at the job of being a cook, for example.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In the household, that's not the masculine job. That's the feminine job. But look at the way that we've changed as a society. Look at some of our top chefs. If you're being paid for the job, it's masculine as fuck. I would love a man that could cook for me.
If it's professional.
I came home and he cooked for me. No, but now it's grown out of just professional. And it's in the house, it's okay. And yes, agreed that that's nonsense. But it's interesting to watch the trajectory of like, when did that happen? Did Gordon Ramsay have a huge thing to do with that? Fucking pieces of you know, pop culture change the trajectory of how we see masculinity and femininity over time. It's very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think, you know, one of the things, and again, you know, the kind of broader spectrum of what's happening in society is something, but like when we, like as a queer community, get excited about, you know, the same things, like looking for a good man, I see that now in queer male profiles all the time. And like, and this is happening throughout things. Looking for a good woman is used as well. And what do we mean? She makes herself look good, but she doesn't no longer need me to take care of her. She is an independent woman. You know, like we're making little tweaks, but again, it's not progress until you drop the woman and man part and start talking about what does it mean to be a good human being and not centering those things around energies that are fictitious.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think, you know, there are a few good pieces of this for us to kind of deeper dive in, because, you know, as we've talked, I obviously always become curious about, you know, some of these evolutions. I mean, I definitely feel like, you know, I'm kind of, this is my ego moment, right on with like some of the, like masculinity is really taking off during the age of advertising, right? Anybody who watched, the fuck was that show about the Mad Men? Mm-hmm. Kind of saw that kind of personified on the screen. Like, what is happening here? How is advertising also influencing at the same time, trying to keep up with this, but also change this, right? It's the chicken or the egg thing. But, you know, advertising starts way back, you know, print advertising. You're still seeing women, you know, kind of slightly bent over with their big, ruffly dress and their apron, you know, kind of like taking care of house, right? I get psychologically why we feel good when we find these traits in our partners and in our relationships, and we meet somebody and we're like, oh, this ticks all the boxes. The problem is, you know, masculinity is kind of a virus of sorts. And I think once you fully, and again, outside of role play, outside of scene setting, outside of, you know, your desire schema, this social aspect of it within interpersonal relationships is super problematic. I will even call out here the idea of queer boy and fag hag culture, you know, this, or the more modern event of lesbian and like, you know, soccer or sports bro friend, you know, like that we are mimicking.
I think you said soccer.
Yes, and so I have soccer on the mind. I was watching that FIFA thing on Netflix, and, you know, and this kind of whole relationship as a friendship dynamic being really problematic. I mean, for many years, going out with female friends, hetero leaning. Female friend, I don't know how to say it. I was like, I don't know any actual strictly heterosexual people, and I haven't for a really fucking long time.
Hetero presenting is probably the word.
Right. Hetero presenting, thank you. You know, who kind of like would not pull out their wallet during like the check time at the dinner table. Who would kind of
really?
Like,
wait, I haven't done that.
No. These people are not in my life anymore for fucking
cheers to that.
My evolution, if you can't evolve with me, I'm sorry, I gotta fucking leave you behind.
Seems so ridiculous to me. That seems so, but they're the first people, right, that would just be like,
Aaron's my like gay friend, I'm his half,
right? Exactly.
And it's just like, okay, exactly. So then you know he's your gay friend,
right?
So like,
right,
he's not taking you home tonight, so what the fuck are you doing?
and I don't mean this in any realm to put this like entire blame, if you will, on the straight bestie. These are the same social pressures at work that are at work with all the like romantic relationships, but like on one level it's both people indulging in this. Sure, right. Sure. Like me as a queer man must be getting something out of must be checking some masculinity's checkbox.
Sure. Because
I held the door for, and let's be real, a lot of times very pretty fucking done up girls are these gay boys' friends. And like, you know, it's like I got to fulfill that. So, and you know, they're kind of playing off that mommy and daddy thing, like sans sex over in that corner, and that way they can fucking just spread their legs for the fucking like football team on the on the queer boy side.
And for the record, Aaron is not just a gay man. Aaron identifies as queer. I didn't want anybody to be confused by that because I did present it, but I'm thinking hags, like people that only see you.
Oh, yeah.
They don't recognize totally. You as queer. They recognize you as a gay man that they're the the haggette of, which is
right.
Like, I always said you were my hag.
Exactly. And that's anybody who hangs around you.
Everybody's my fag hag.
Exactly.
Right, because fuck gender.
Exactly. And that's the thing, you know, it's funny because, you know, we all in our little fam here, like, you know, often like switch around, play pronoun games, or actually we don't play pronoun games, that's why we use whatever the fucking pronoun comes to mind, depending on what we're talking about. And I kind of was like, you know, doing that the other day with somebody I hadn't, you know, not known for very well, and they're very confused. They're like, wait, is that a girl? And I was like, oh fuck, who cares what, like that's not the, wait, oh, you're heavily focusing on the pronouns. Like,
you and I were non-binary before that was a term.
Well, and I only mean it in the sense, it's like, you know, and this isn't to shame that person at all.
No, of course.
It reminds me again about like the gender construct focus, even though if you're talking about something that has nothing to do with gender, you know, the focusing in, rather the subject wasn't as important to you as the pronoun that I used to describe this.
I think that's people's fear of misgendering, and that makes sense. I would never judge it,
sure.
But I do understand how there is a lot. So there's like that other opposite side of these things where it's so, people are so nervous to make any type of mistake when it comes to even just thinking of these things that they can't, you know, their brain doesn't, it's like, does not compute. What are you saying? You know, they immediately need definitions and people to, which again, puts people in fucking boxes again, you know, and that's how.
Yeah. Well, so, and I think that's the point. Exactly. Like we are very, and I mean, aside from like, you know, trans identity, like conversation, the general obsession we do have with gender as a society becomes evident. And we do a lot of policing around gender, even on that side of it, right? We have a lot of policing going, a lot of other people telling other people what gender is and what gender is nothing. It's a social construct.
Right.
Let me say it again out loud for those in the fucking back. Gender is a social construct. It is nothing. That's why when we police people over their definition of it or a police over it, it is an issue, because if it already is fictitious, it is whatever the fuck you want it to be. Go have fun, kids. But if we're to get there, we really do have to believe and understand that it's not real.
Right. And, you know, I always get nervous that I say something wrong, as with the example I just gave of people saying something wrong. It's not to say that we shouldn't respect gender once it's provided. If somebody says this is somebody, if this is their pronoun, that's their fucking pronouns. Do not get it twisted. But when somebody has said, I'm cool and there's no necessary pronouns here, then also be cool with it. Chill. It's okay. Yeah. Take a deep breath.
Absolutely.
Go with it. You know? So it's both sides need to be respected, right? The people not giving a fuck. Like, I remember when we interviewed Haley recently, they were like, the students don't care what fucking pronoun you use because gender is just like societal construct, right? So it's like that needs to also be respected and recognized. So both sides of that, people need to just like understand their space for both.
Absolutely. And again, my commentary is really just like, you know, to get to the roots of what I think would be a nice evolution for mankind. Even that, listen to that, mankind.
Human.
I did that on purpose. Exactly. You know, there's a great, almost infamous Star Trek Next Generation episode for all you nerds out there, where they come across a alien species or whatever the terminology is that doesn't have, is genderless.
Yeah. Right? Wasn't that like one of the first non-binary characters or something like that? That's so cool.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's also, there's a story by Ursula K. Oh my God, I'm going to forget her last name. Sorry, nerds, you can crucify me for that one. But she also wrote a lot of sci-fi, like dealing with this idea of genderless, or what would that mean? If we take out the construct, what would it mean for our relationships? Not our desire. Again, desire, that's going to be whatever the context of the time that you grew up in. I'm sorry, I hate to break it to you. Kinsey like showed that example a long time ago. Our desires, our fetishes, the things that we're into, you know, they're either a response to or a direct like connection to how we are kind of socially like pressured and socially constructed within our own dynamic. But I do think the more we can say these things, what is our goal? Our goal is to let go of shame and increase our life pleasure, right? If there's not a base thing that we can work on as a community, and I start with fam and work my way out, you know, we have a great opportunity to really like practice this idea of what would it mean to really start believing that gender is not real in this sense. And that the things that connect us to how we interact and how we socialize with one another and how we sexualize and romanticize one another, how would that evolve and change if we were really, really able to believe that?
That's beautiful. So next week and the week after, we are going to do a deeper dive into this conversation. We're going to pull out some studies, get our hands dirty, do a little research, and we're going to give y'all a more, I guess, cohesive examination of this topic as a whole, not just our opinions. Because what we just discussed, again, was the opinions of the screw and the screw alone. However,
you know who we should talk about? Yes. You know who we should talk about? Because, you know, we are a sex podcast. So there's some interesting stuff that both Felicia and I together learned about when we were in school, about like some of the stuff in terms of sex. Like, I'm thinking Pat Khalifa, right? Was that her last name? You know, she was a lesbian dominatrix, fister. She was a lesbian dominatrix that specialized in fisting gay identifying men.
Yes.
So like I think, you know, when we get into picking that, you know, I know we're doing deeper, we're gonna debunk and all, which I love doing because it actually does hold our, you know, feet to the flames a little bit. But it'd be interesting to do like something like that. And, you know, kind of, you know, and that's why we do this. We could talk forever about this is like really the reality. So, you know, this is what I really do think most of what Felicia and I know and we talk about in terms of masculinities, but jack of all trades, master of none is literally us. So
master leader of none.
masturbator of none. So yeah, I'm excited. And then we're going to have a roundtable discussion with, I think, most of the NQO fam.
Yeah, New Queer Order fam going to come up in here.
Woohoo!
We're going to have a ton of people on, which is going to be a beautiful thing. So we'll get a lot of people's perspectives personally, and then, you know, their knowledge outside of their personal experience, which is a beautiful thing to come together in a beautiful NQO circle jerk together.
Ooh, oh,
I'll
shit.
Be the cracker in the middle.
So thanks.
Crack ass cracker.
Oh, Jesus. Not that kind of cracker.
Oh, sorry.
The edible one.
Ooh.
Thank you all for tuning in to this week of The Screw. Reach out to your friends, hug them tight. Make sure your queer friends are happy and healthy and okay. They're struggling this week, so please show some love. And be sure to like and subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at TheScrewNYC. Subscribe to us anywhere where you listen to podcasts. Here is fine. Give us 5 stars if you can. Download all of our episodes. And be sure to tune in next week with another conversation about masculinities. Thanks, everybody.
Woo-hoo. Bye.